From South Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and many points in between, this is Political Talk on AnnenbergRadio.org and NeonTommy.com. I'm Max Schwartz, along with Katie Gregg and Jenna DeKnight. Without further ado, let's get started. On this week's broadcast, I will be giving the wrap-up. We are going to start today with breaking news. We had today on Monday, April 15th, tax day, at the Boston Marathon at approximately 2:50 p.m. Eastern Time, an explosion at the 26th mile of the Boston Marathon that happened in two trash cans and, according to the police commissioner, approximately 50 to 100 yards apart from one another. In addition, we had a third explosion at the John F. Kennedy Memorial Library in Boston. However, we have conflicting reports. The Boston Police Commissioner has said that they are considering that a related incident, while people affiliated with the library say that was purely mechanical. We do know that there are at least 50 people hurt, and at last count, we had two deceased, and everyone was immediately transported or semi-immediately transported from the scene. The sad part about all this, despite everything I've already mentioned, is that the 26th mile was dedicated to the families of the Newtown, Connecticut tragedy, and this apparently detonated right in front of them, and we don't know at this point whether they are related. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I saw also President Obama mentioned that they're going to make sure that whoever's in charge of this bombing, these explosions, is definitely going to be punished to the full extent. So, I mean, if they can find out who was in charge of, or who placed these explosions, explosives, then they'll definitely be persecuted, which I think is necessary.
It's such a tragedy.
Yes, it really is. And I was listening on the radio, and Boston's police commissioner had said all the resources they were going on. They immediately called the FBI. They were talking to people from the Massachusetts State Police, and they had a general from the National Guard there. So we will bring you all the latest developments in our next broadcast. And it is a very sad event. Is there one more thing you wanted to add?
No.
Okay. Now, here after our short music break is going to be Katie discussing President Obama's budget.
Last Wednesday, President Obama proposed a plan that has received criticism from both the left and right. The plan entails a $3.7 trillion budget for 2014 that would cut the federal deficit by $1.8 trillion in the next 10 years. The left does not believe that the budget goes far enough, while the right believes it goes too far. His plan would include tax increases that would primarily affect high-income individuals and corporations, which is what Republicans do not want. Although more spending would be allocated to non-defense research as well as infrastructure and education, the money would come from other sources so as not to add to the deficit. The proposed budget includes changes to Medicare and Social Security. Obama's fellow Democrats do not like that changes to these important programs are included.
Both parties, for example, agree that the rising cost of caring for an aging generation is the single biggest driver of our long-term deficits. And the truth is, for those like me who deeply believe in our social insurance programs, think it's one of the core things that our government needs to do, if we want to keep Medicare working as well as it has, if we want to preserve the ironclad guarantee that Medicare represents, then we're going to have to make some changes. But they don't have to be drastic ones. And instead of making drastic ones later, what we should be doing is making some manageable ones now. The reforms I'm proposing will strengthen Medicare for future generations without undermining that ironclad guarantee that Medicare represents. We'll reduce our government's Medicare bills by finding new ways to reduce the cost of health care, not by shifting the cost to seniors or the poor or families with disabilities. They are reforms that keep the promise we've made to our seniors, basic security that is rock solid and dependable and there for you when you need it. That's what my budget represents. My budget does also contain the compromise I offered Speaker Boehner at the end of last year, including reforms championed by Republican leaders in Congress. And I don't believe that all these ideas are optimal, but I'm willing to accept them as part of a compromise. If and only if they contain protections for the most vulnerable Americans. But if we're serious about deficit reduction, then these reforms have to go hand in hand with reforming our tax code to make it more simple and more fair so that the wealthiest individuals and biggest corporations cannot keep taking advantage of loopholes and deductions that most Americans don't get.
Perhaps the reason that this budget has received so much criticism from both political parties is because the plan came after the Senate and House had each passed very different budget blueprints. Obama's plan calls for replacing the sequester cuts with different cuts in addition to cutting the deficit. On the note of the deficit, Obama does not believe that the middle-class Americans should hold the burden of paying off the deficit. The president's budget calls on investments to repair infrastructure and to improve schools and the quality of education for the youth. He would like an increased tax on tobacco companies to help pay for this.
To make America a magnet for good jobs, this budget invests in new manufacturing hubs to help turn regions left behind by globalization into global centers of high-tech jobs. We'll spark new American innovation and industry with cutting-edge research, like the initiative I announced to map the human brain and cure disease. We'll continue our march towards energy independence and address the threat of climate change. And our Rebuild America partnership will attract private investment to put construction workers back on the job, rebuilding our roads, our bridges, and our schools, in turn attracting even more new business to communities across the country. To help workers earn the skills they need to fill those jobs, we'll work with states to make high-quality preschool available to every child in America. And we're going to pay for it by raising taxes on tobacco products that harm our young people. It's the right thing to do. We'll reform our high schools and job training programs to equip more Americans with the skills they need to compete in the 21st century economy. And we'll help more middle-class families afford the rising cost of college.
It is not likely that this budget plan will pass. So, guys, in discussing this, I thought it was interesting that Obama proposed changes to Medicare. And the reason why I thought this was particularly interesting is because I've heard a lot about how when Medicare came in, when it was first started, it was the life expectancy was just, I think it was like 67 years old or something. And now life expectancy has raised significantly. So Obama's, cutting that age where you would receive Medicare, I think would save billions of dollars. So what do y'all think about that?
Well, it would definitely save money, but I think he had to put some of the social safety net programs on the table for anything to be accomplished in this completely partisan Congress, not bipartisan. And he ended up putting both on, and that's what's angering Democrats. But ultimately, we were going to have to change the program one way or another because, unfortunately, it looks like it may be unsustainable, but we will definitely see. And he's also changing Social Security, and Social Security hasn't been changed in a drastic format for a very long time, although I believe they have stopped giving adjustments for the cost of living. But with inflation and everything, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all comes about. And especially with the baby boomer generation going as it is, it will be very interesting to see how this Medicare works out. But you are right that we are having a longer life expectancy. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's just a matter of how many members of his own party are going to support this.
Yeah. So is that, do you think that Democrats even would be in support of cutting down the age where you would receive Medicare aid?
I don't know. It looks like from the great opposition he has, probably not. However, I'm sure that a bunch of Democrats will be rallying toward his budget because if anything is going to pass, it's going to be this one. It's the most moderate of the two, and he is the president.
You think that his budget would pass over the other budgets that have been proposed?
Well, I think that it probably has the greatest likelihood of passing. Whether it actually does, I don't know. But if you think about it, I don't think Democrats obviously aren't going to vote for the Republican budget. Republicans won't vote for the Democratic budget. At least in President Obama's budget, there's concessions that both sides didn't want to have to put on the table, but that ultimately were.
Okay. So, well, priority.
I think what everyone can agree on, though, is that, I mean, it's great that he's planning to put more focus on improving school systems mm-hmm. because, I mean, that's just been, I mean, they're the future of our country.
Well, especially, like, early, he's helping, like, pre-K schooling, which has been lacking, I think, a lot.
And he wanted, and in his State of the Union address, he has said he stated he wants to put preschools, make preschools accessible for all of the children in the country, which I think makes a big difference later on in education.
It definitely does. Like, I remember when I was going into pre-K, there was, like, long, like, waiting lists for, you know, to get kids in there. So I think this should be.
I think what's even more interesting is that he's calling on a tax of the tobacco companies to pay for this.
Yeah,
that's something that we haven't heard of in quite a bit. So I think that will be very interesting to see because I don't recall the Republicans being against that, nor do I recall the Democrats. It's just a matter of what's going to happen now that this has been suggested.
Right. That's definitely an interesting idea. Thanks for y'all's input. So after our short music break, Jenna DeKnight will talk about the New York City mayoral race.
The 2013 mayoral elections for New York City are scheduled for November. Mayor Michael Bloomberg has held this position for 3 terms and has tried to make his city a model for other cities, for being healthy and for being green. While in office, Bloomberg went from Republican to liberal independent and is now a big advocate for gun control and is a leader in the movement to create a healthier society. So who's in the running to fill these very big shoes? Well, we have City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, who is currently the front runner in the race. If she's elected, she'll be the first female mayor as well as the first lesbian mayor. Other candidates include Scott Stringer, Bill Thompson, Raymond Kelly, John Liu, Tom Allen, Gregory Floyd, Bill de Blasio, and possibly Anthony Weiner. Weiner's campaign is conducting a poll to see whether people would accept his return to the political landscape and whether he could be considered a real candidate. Weiner decided to test the water rather than take immediate action because in May 2011, he tweeted inappropriate pictures of himself to a 21-year-old female college student, which led his resignation from the House. Senator Malcolm Smith and Councilman Dan Halloran were among 6 people arrested on federal corruption charges on April 2nd. Malcolm Smith, a Democrat, allegedly wanted to rig the 2013 mayoral race so that he could run as a Republican. Republican City Councilman Dan Halloran reportedly helped arrange the bribes to buy Smith a waiver, and 2 Republican officials had their hands out, reportedly saying, "Show me the money and the waiver is yours." Last week, former Representative Anthony Weiner expressed his interest in possibly entering the crowded race and for the first time addressed his 2011 racy Twitter picture that led to his resignation. Before he left office, Weiner was expected to be the front runner in this year's mayoral race. But after his fall, the public is questioning whether or not he can make a comeback. Weiner faces numerous challenges. The Democratic Party is crowded. Other candidates have been building their campaigns for months now. Many of Weiner's former staffers are already working with other candidates. Weiner would need to quickly build a campaign organization from the ground up. And of course, there's the scandalous baggage he now has to carry. He does, however, have enough funding. KCAL-9 reported that Weiner has more than $4 million remaining from his House re-election campaign, and he is eligible for more than $1 million in matching funds, if he chooses to accept them. So what do you guys think? I mean, do you think that Weiner has a strong chance? I mean, he had certainly a great one before the scandal, but do you think that's enough to...
No, I think it's interesting that he's choosing to run at all, or thinking about it at least, because... I mean, I remember when his whole scandal happened, there was so much talk about all of this happening, and like a bunch of people really wanted him to step down, and which he did. So, I mean, yes, time has passed since that happened, but really it's been what, a year and a half, something like that. So, yeah. I don't think that he'll be able to overcome that scandal.
Well, what a bunch of people did mention was that, I guess, typically it's easier for politicians to overcome, like, sex scandals rather than, like, you know, money or bribery, like...
Right.
I want to correct that, though, because technically this isn't a sex scandal. This is a picture scandal. And he didn't break the law in doing this. And I heard one political strategist on the on the news say he was being stupid and stupid's not a crime.
Right.
So
but it's
very
not
interesting. It's not appropriate, but this is completely different than previous congressional sex scandals that have cost careers. And right. It's not even costing careers. Mark Sanford's running for office in South Carolina again. So it's very interesting. We'll see what happens.
And you think about like Bill Clinton. He's so respected in the political sphere and, you know, he had that scandal. So, I mean, I guess you can bounce back from it, but I don't really see that for Wiener.
I think it'll forever have it on his reputation.
Absolutely. And I will say that your point about not being very long ago, I can't believe this was in 2011.
I know.
When we chose this topic. It seems like such a long time ago. But I will say that I'm not entirely surprised because he was going to make a political comeback. It's just, I think what's more surprising is that it's at this point,
right.
And he didn't do it the next time around. But I, as I'll mention a little bit later, I think he is by far the most qualified candidate in the election.
All right. Well, best of luck to him. After another brief music break, Max will be on to wrap up the topics discussed in today's show.
As Katie mentioned, President Obama's budget has opposition from his own party and the Republican Party. Regardless of where the budget belongs on the political spectrum, Obama is calling on both sides to compromise in creating a budget. His budget deals with the spending problem and the revenue problem the nation faces. Obama would like to invest in infrastructure, education, and give money to programs that citizens rely on, such as Meals on Wheels. He believes that greater investment in America and its people will lead to additional investment, all of which will continue to help the economy recover and put people back to work. The president would like to do all of this by placing greater taxes on the tobacco industry, so it will not add to the deficit. He also would like to ensure that Medicare and Social Security are there for the millions of people that depend on their services. On the spending issue, Obama would like to replace the sequester cuts with other cuts to programs that are not as important to the United States. He also has a deficit reduction plan that calls for more fortunate Americans and big corporations to pay more in taxes, so the middle-class families are not stuck with the bill. As Jenna discussed, the New York City mayoral election is in full swing. Many candidates are vying for the coveted seat of mayor in one of the nation's most important cities. Even Anthony Weiner, who was once thought by many to be the next mayor, may enter the race, ending his retreat into private life after his Twitter debacle. The current leader is City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, but her opponents include Scott Stringer, Bill Thompson, Raymond Kelly, John Liu, Tom Allen, Gregory Floyd, and Bill de Blasio. Some people argue that Quinn is the most prepared to take over the job and that she is one of the best fit for the job because she knows the political scene of the city. Quinn advocated for the elimination of term limits, which some believe indicates her close alliance with Bloomberg because it gave him more time in office. She also approved a large sanitation project on the Upper East Side, which most residents were against. She has moved from being liberal to the moderate speaker she is now. This may be one of the reasons she is the front runner. I believe her biggest competitor is Bill Thompson. My reasons for this are that, according to the New York Times, he lost to Bloomberg by only 5% in the last election, and because he is a Democrat. Given the makeup of the city and its history, I do not believe that a strong right-wing candidate can win. Bloomberg and Quinn have evolved toward the center during their time in office. The problems with Thompson are that he is not as well-known and that he is a Democrat. Independent Adolfo Carrion may also give Quinn a problem because he is now an independent. He was president of the Bronx Borough, which gives him the name recognition advantage that Thompson lacks. The race has not gone without controversy, however, because there have been multiple arrests in a plot to rig the election. Arguably, the most significant and most publicized involves State Senator Malcolm Smith. Their elimination from the race gives those remaining a chance to fight over a new block of supporters. Now we will move into our 1 minute spotlight section. Katie?
Thanks, Max. So on Tuesday, the 8 senators who have been collaborating on immigration reform will unveil their bipartisan plan. While some small details are up for debate, the major issues have been settled. In a report last week, the California Senator Dianne Feinstein wrote that the agreement, quote, resolves outstanding issues including wage levels, agricultural guest worker visas, and protection for U.S. workers. This plan would affect millions of undocumented U.S. residents, calling for a lengthy road that could lead to citizenship, but only after 13 years. This road to citizenship will only be possible if the residents pass background checks and pay various fines and taxes along the way. The plan developed by this bipartisan group will still have to be passed by the House and Senate in order for it to go into effect. It is likely that the Senate will begin to seriously consider the plan in June.
Thank you, Katie. A new variation of bird flu that the World Health Organization says has caused at least 11 deaths in China has genetic characteristics that make it well adapted to infect people. In a report published last Thursday in the New England Journal of Medicine, samples from all three patients, all of who died, had mutations that have previously been shown to increase transmissibility and to help the virus grow in a mammal's respiratory tract. Saturday, China reported a 7-year-old Beijing girl is the latest person to become infected with the H7N9 flu strain, bringing the total to 44. The strain is normally found in birds and until last month was not known to infect people. On a more reassuring note, investigators have found no evidence that the virus has passed directly from person to person. More than 1,000 close contacts of the patients are being monitored by Chinese health officials, according to the World Health Organization.
Thank you, Jenna. Compromise is possible in Washington after all, and the gun control fever has not departed the Capitol yet. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania reached a compromise on federal gun control legislation. On the note of gun control, Manchin and Toomey's bill was approved for debate by a 68-31 vote. The Senate will debate the bill in the coming weeks. Majority Leader Harry Reid was going to call for a vote on gun control whether the two reached a compromise or not. This bill would mandate background checks on certain gun sales and improve programs in schools. I say background checks are only required in certain sales because if a gun is sold by a family member or a friend, a background check is not needed. The bill still has to go through the House of Representatives, which is controlled by Republicans. Thank you for listening to Political Talk. We would like to thank Joel Zink, our engineer, Willis Seidenberg, and Karen Lowe, the Annenberg Radio News co-faculty advisors, and Aaron Schrenk, the Annenberg Radio News executive producer, for all of their help. The music used on today's program has been composed, recorded, and provided by Eric Schwartz. He is on the web at www.ericschwartz.com. From the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, I'm Max Schwartz.
I'm Katie Gregg.
And I'm Jenna Denight.
And we're saying, have a great week. We hope to have you back next week. In the meantime, we can be reached at politicaltalkpodcast@gmail.com and on Twitter by using the hashtag politicaltalkpodcast. All audio used in this week's program is courtesy of C-SPAN.